History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
We've been waiting all year to get a sense that maybe the Sox are finally getting hot and capable of staying hot. A Sunday win would complete a sweep, put them 5 games over 500 for the first time all year. And leading a bad team in the eighth, and then again leading them by 5 runs in the 10th, you figured, hey, it's all working out. Would you believe they still had to cling to the side of the cliff to win that Sunday game? Shouldn't have been that close. Shouldn't have taken nearly 5 hours, but just in time for the showdown with the sizzling Minnesota Twins, the Sox have banked a 5-game win streak. They are 5 games over 500. The winning weekend is reviewed right now.
It's your Daily Sox Podcast. It's your Daily Sox Podcast. It's where you're going to find out what the Sox are doing. It's your Daily Sox Podcast.
So Baltimore calls itself Charm City, which the Red Sox have basically turned into Paradise City, where the grass is green and the girls are pretty. They won 8 out of 9 there last year, 5 in a row now this year. But man, it shouldn't have taken 4 hours, 44 minutes on a getaway day. Jeez. Josh Lewin with you, and we're going to unpack the weekend for you. A balmy, humid Baltimore weekend as Boston played a rebuilding, retooling embarrassment of a ball club. I mean, you should win 3 out of 3 against the Orioles. And think about this now going forward. If you sweep the bad teams and split or take 2 out of 3 against the 500-ish teams, and you win 1 out of 3 against the good teams, which is what the Sox have been doing, you know, you probably will get in the playoffs doing that. That's a recipe for 620 or 630 baseball the rest of the way. That would mean 93-ish wins and very likely a spot in that wild card game. Now, unless you find a way to compete against the Yankees, Rays, Astros, and Twins, you do set yourself up for a quick October exit. But if the goal is simply to win 90 to 95 games and make it to October, actually, they are right back on track. So, the weekend certainly provided a chance for some target practice before skipping off to Target Field. The Orioles are Trey Mancini and a bunch of AAA guys. I mean, they're on pace to allow 320 home runs. The major league record isn't even 260. Overall, 137 home runs have now been hit at Camden Yards in 37 games. And thankfully, Sunday, the Red Sox hit a couple late. They won the game 8-6 in 10. J.D. Martinez did not contribute Sunday, but he had had 4 homers in his last 4 games heading in. The home run hitters for the Sox on Sunday included Marco Hernandez. Yeah, we're going to hear from him in a bit. He had a biggie in the top of the ninth with the team down a run. Then a 458-foot cannon shot from Devers, who right now is playing at, I'm not even kidding, an MVP level. We'll get back to Rafi in a bit, but let's back all the way up to Friday, because after hitting 5 home runs Thursday back at Fenway, the Sox busted out with 6 more dongs in the series opener. They had 5 in a stretch of 5 outs in the middle of the game. Thank you, Dan Straley. Boston, by the way, has hit 5. Let's see here. It had been 5 home runs in 3 straight games one time in Major League history, so they were going to make a run at that on Saturday. Didn't quite get there, but Friday was a cakewalk. It was 13-2. Saturday, more singles and doubles and homers. Brock Holt was a catalyst, and he's 11 of 17 career against Dylan Bundy, so no big surprise that he was a guy that came through. He had an RBI hit in the 6th after Xander Bogaerts had tripled in Devers. Devers 2-for-5 in that one. Raised his average up to 304, his OPS to 855. And shining in the field, too. He's not just making the plays he should make now, but a bunch that you can't believe he is making. He evoked memories of his idol, fellow Dominican Adrian Beltre, with a running catch on a Chris Davis pop-up over the weekend. He covered 111 feet going way back in the left field before he made the over-the-shoulder catch. He just looks like the most confident player on the field these days. And Saturday was, believe it or not, scoreless through 5 innings, but with Chris Sale on the mound in Baltimore, you figured that 2-run 6 would be plenty. Sale in Baltimore is 7-1 lifetime, 197 ERA, 95 strikeouts in 63 innings, which is just stupid. Overall now, Sale's got a run, if you go back to May 3rd, where it's 98 strikeouts in 60 innings, an ERA of basically 2. And he's never thrown a pitch harder than 98 in that time. Most of his fastball is more like 93, 94. So the Sox with a pretty easy win on Saturday, 7-2, meaning they'd outscored Baltimore 20-4 in the first two games in Baltimore. So that set up the Father's Day Series finale. Brian Johnson back to the mound for the first time in a long time, matched up against fellow lefty John Means, who in three starts this year against the Sox has actually been really good every time. This was a nutso ballgame. It was a nice, chill 2-1 Red Sox lead into the eighth. Johnson had made it through only three innings. He gave up five hits and a run. A total of 8 Sox pitchers ended up working in this game, two of which were ineffective. Travis Lakins in the eighth, Josh Smith in the 10th, almost gave it all back. Boston throwing 236 pitches in 10 innings, which is basically 76 pitches too many. So Baltimore had taken the lead in the eighth inning. A Marcus Walden wild pitch, that was not helpful. A Hanser Alberto single to center actually made it 3-2, Baltimore. Then Marco Hernandez with his first home run in 1,112 days at the big league level. 395-footer to center ties it up. Red Sox actually threatened to take the lead in the ninth. Mookie tripled right after that, but he was stranded. And on we went to the 10th inning. Rafael Devers, we mentioned, a long home run to center. Betts would reach on an infield single to short. Bogarts ends up scoring, and Chavis ends up scoring. And you had Brock Holt in the mix. Vasquez singled him in. So it goes to 8-3 to the bottom of the 10th inning. Stevie Wilkerson, a home run, two-run shot to cut it to 8-5. Trey Mancini, a home run, make it 8-6. And you're thinking, guys, come on. I mean, I know the bullpen is not in a great spot right now, but this is just silly if you give this back. They didn't. Brandon Workman ends up with the win. And we end up talking to a couple people after the game. We're going to get you to Alex Cora in a moment. But first, let's hear from Marco Hernandez, who joined the guys after the game in the booth.
Okay, thank you, Will. Marco, congratulations. That had to be the biggest hit of your career, huh?
Yes, one of those, yeah, one of those. Bad that you go out there and try to have fun and try to go try to find a good pitch that hit and see something happen.
Marco, they say that when you try and hit home runs, it rarely happens. Take us back to that at bat of the ninth inning. Were you trying to just put a good swing on the ball and it just shot out of here, or were you looking to hit a home run?
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, I try to go there and looking for something up on the zone and try to put a good swing on and see what's going on. Something happened sometime and sometime now.
He threw you three straight change-ups. Were you expecting that?
First pitch, yes. I mean, because I was swinging the first pitch the whole game, and I tried to settle down on that a bit, but I see the change-up on the zone, and I swing and miss, and I'm ready for more changes, you know.
Hey, Marco, how difficult is it in a game like this to maintain your concentration late in a game? You play 4.5 hours, it's a hot day out there. Your mind can have a tendency to wonder, how tough is it to concentrate?
I mean, the team wants to win, so we can lose the concentrate, especially late inning. The most important inning at 7, 8, and 9. And we never lose the concentrate. We battle, they tie the game, and we get the win.
And you got both of your home runs in the big leagues right here, a little more than 3 years apart. How about that?
Oh, I mean, it feels pretty special for me. I mean, hit another home run here. I mean, against the same guy. So he's one of the best relievers in the major league and able to connect the ball against him. And it's pretty huge for me.
It's got to feel great to get back to, Marco, with all the shoulder problems you've had and the lost couple of years you've had trying to get back to the big leagues. It feels pretty sweet right now.
Yeah, it's been a long road for me. I mean, and it's been a blessing for me. Thanks God for giving me the opportunity to play baseball, and thanks the Red Sox organization for the patience that they have with me and through all those things.
Yes, indeed. And how about your friend, the guy we love to watch so much, Rafi Devers? Wow, well, that was a shot, huh?
Oh, man, I know Devers since I got here in 2015. He's a special kid. He's a great ball player also every single day. And, you know, everybody know what he can do on the field. I mean, he can hit. He can play defense. He can run. I mean, he's a really good ball player.
Well, Marco, thank you so much. We really appreciate you joining us. And without you, the Red Sox would not have had a win.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, Marco Hernandez.
So cool to have Marco Hernandez back. He's worked so hard to come back, and he was part of it big time. 14 hits total for Boston Sunday, 3 from Mookie, 2 apiece from Vasquez and Devers and Bogarts and Chavis. And by the way, how about Vasquez hitting second in this batting order twice in the last 4 games and now being at a 290 average for the year? That leads me to my list of likes. I've got Boston catchers high on the list here because last year, the entire season, it was 10 home runs, 43 runs batted in from the catching position. Already this year, it's 11 home runs and 41 runs batted in. So they're going to eclipse all of that pretty soon. Xander Bogaerts makes my nice list here because game after game, in a season that's been very frustrating, this has been the most consistent guy. He signed the 6-year, $120 million contract right on that first road trip of the season, so he's got a cemented future here, and he's certainly not just walking it down now. He's turned into a patient hitter, very good defensively. He's walking a lot. He's driving in runs. Love me some Xander Bogaerts. J.D. Martinez, in the 6 games since coming back from the latest back spasms, he's 9-for-33, couple doubles, 4 homers, 4 walks. Yes, he did take an 0-for on Sunday, but he rakes in Baltimore usually. It's 1 home run every 8 at-bats their career. That's the best of anybody ever at Camden Yards. And if you want to look to the start of the 2018 season, most RBIs in the majors, Martinez tied with Nolan Arenado right at the top, 168 apiece. Yelich next at 167. And quietly top 10 on that list is Xander. He's tied for 9th with everybody's favorite Alex Bregman. So there. Chavis, let's talk Chavis here. He had an Adrian Beltre-style down-on-one-knee homer against the Rangers back at Fenway last week that seemingly has pointed him back in the right direction here. He's still been playing good defense, and that's a nice surprise. Alex Cora said it's kind of like Pedroia early in his career back in 07. Remember, he was hitting 150, 160 in April, but would always get out there and play good defense. I think Chavis has returned a corner here. And one more thought on Devers. He is now one of 15 players in Major League history with 40 home runs and 15 steals while still being 22 years old. There's a lot of current guys that make that list. Bellinger, Trout, Bryce Harper, Carlos Correa, Acuna. But before that, it was only guys like A-Rod and Reggie Jackson and Frank Robinson. So it's a hell of a list to be a part of. I got some dislikes here for you, too, because why not? Let's balance it out. But let's hear from Alex Cora first after the game on Sunday.
Feels good. I mean, took us a while, but like we've been along. We are where we're at. We know where we're in the standings. And, you know, to get there, that was good. Total team effort. We were short, not only position player-wise, but open too. We were trying to actually stay away from Barnes and work. But, you know, at that point, you know, I felt like, you know what, let's give the offense a chance to score runs. So we brought work early, and then Smitty got the last outs.
After all Marco's been through, how fun was that to see? After all Marco has been through.
Oh, amazing. Stay on that changeup, hit it the other way. He's been pull happy the last few games and swinging at bad pitches, and he stays on a changeup and drives it the other way. That was good. Happy for him. Happy that he was able to contribute.
And how about with Devers?
I mean, that's probably the hardest wall that I have ever seen since, like, 2004 when Barry was hitting home runs against the Dodgers all the time. I mean, that was loud, and I guess it reminds people the one he hit of Chapman, I guess. But rehab assignments, all of that, and, like, the great Maury Wills used to say, you know, there's a 70% that is a competition, and the rest is the fans and the stadium and the competition. You know, that 30%, you don't get that down there. And from pitch one, you have to execute. He did a good job, and we feel like, you know, his next one, he's going to be okay. You know, we're looking for a guy that can give us 5 in that spot. You know, today was one of those games that, you know, we had to go to the bullpen early, and we grind it out. You know, we got the W. But I think he'll be fine for the next.
Alex, you guys obviously have some big goals this year, but just what is the importance of setting those little goals and maybe get some morale going?
It's very important. I'm not going to lie. It seems like we're searching for a lot of stuff, and kind of like, you know, that win against Texas, the second one, to come here and stay playing good baseball and swing the bats the way we did, and just overall, there's a good vibe, you know. We're in the middle of the season, and we didn't come out of the blocks the way we wanted, but it's still a long race, and we're still in the hunt. You know, you start looking now, and You know, obviously, I always say it. I don't look, I don't see, but in Fenway, in front of the dugout, there's the standings, and you see it. So we have a pretty good idea where we at and what we're doing as a team, and we know we have to get better, but it's a good feeling.
What's the next one?
Well, I'll talk to him first. Yeah, I'll let you know.
I appreciate the skipper, as he appreciates, I'm sure, the Red Sox finally being five games over 500. That's been a goal. They're there. They can take off from here. I mentioned that I got some dislikes that I don't mind sharing with you here, and they're pretty obvious. I mean, the difference between how they play against good and bad opponents, the Red Sox bats just haven't showed up against the good teams. Their run differential against the current playoff-bound teams is a minus 32. They're a plus 81 against everybody else. Still don't like the bullpen leakage. There's still not a lot that you can really bank on. Brazier's coming back from the bereavement list. He'll join the team in Minnesota. You've got a very, very short amount of time now, basically about a week, week and a half before Stephen Wright is back. And you're hoping that Velazquez can come back. And obviously, Eovaldi's going to get back in the rotation soon. That'll kick somebody down the line. But, you know, you look at Jalen Beeks, who's pitching very well for Tampa Bay, 2.5 ERA. Ty Buttrey has a 1.8 for the Angels. That was a guy traded for Ian Kinsler. Those two lefties and formerly labeled marginal prospects, they look pretty good in the Red Sox bullpen right now. One other for you, the slow starts. Boston's leadoff hitters have a 0.71 first inning batting average, by far the worst in the majors. That is not setting the table. We would like to see somebody lead off with a double or a triple just one time. And another dislike, because nothing happens in a vacuum, don't like that the Yankees just brought in the leading American League home run hitter. That is bringing sand to the beach when you do that. They brought Edwin Encarnacion in from Seattle, and as you may know, that's a guy who has killed the Red Sox for years, and he's now going to be in pinstripes. So, up next, you beat the cupcake on your schedule, right? You were the Ohio State University. You just played your conference opener against Ball State. But now you go to the big house to play the Michigan Wolverines, so to speak. A couple states to the left, the Sox are going to the land of 10,000 lakes. They're going to Minnesota, which that land of 10,000 lakes thing is a misnomer. If you guys don't know this one, Minnesotans have long been known for underappreciating things. That there are actually 12,092 lakes in that state, and they round down. They call it the land of 10,000 lakes. In California, we'd be claiming like 80,000 lakes. I've always had a soft spot for Minneapolis. I like that town a lot. Like the Twins front office. I like how they do their business. I always go back, though, to the curmudgeonly Woody Page from the Denver paper. He once wrote that the occupants of Minneapolis think St. Paul is a woebegone, stick-in-the-mud, artless, countrified backwater town of homely women and foggy-bottom men. And the residents of St. Paul think Minneapolis is a transparent, overgrown, pompous, self-centered, pretentious collection of glass and steel skyway labyrinths inhabited by gopher gnomes and plastic hussies. And they're both right, is what Woody Page says. I like me some St. Paul, too. It's very down home, down to earth. And Minneapolis, yeah, for the Midwest, it's got some places you can go and have a good time. It's like a diet Chicago. But as for the teams that have been there lately, the last 8 years into this one, worst overall record in baseball. And this after the previous 8 years that had seen five division titles and a winning percentage of 550. But the next 8 years, that winning percentage was a sad 440. The sad irony of sorts, their marketing slogan last year was the grammatically awkward, "This is how we baseball." And how they baseballed was finishing 12 games out of first with 84 losses, and they fired their manager. But we knew that things might get more interesting this year, and they really have. I mean, even in spring training, we looked around and said, boy, you know, they brought in C.J. Cron and Nelson Cruz, Marwin Gonzalez, Jonathan Scope, and those four new players only added $36 million to their payroll, and that's 104 home runs they brought in. And they are now on pace to double their amount of home runs from a year ago. That would set a major league record. No more Joe Mauer to worry about. He's retired, and his number 7 jersey has been as well. Well-deserved honor for a native son of Minnesota. But they've essentially replaced Mauer with power. I mean, it's all those guys we just talked about, and they already had Buxton and Sano and Polanco and Rosario. It's a fun team to watch. It really is. And Rocco Baldelli's in charge of it now, and more of a focus on analytics than they've ever had in that chair, and certainly more songs by Phish on the playlist in the clubhouse than they've ever had. because I don't believe Tom Kelly was a fish head. I'd have to look that up. Paul Molitor, maybe. Molitor was the guy Baldelli replaced. And Molitor, at one time during his retirement summer, followed Springsteen around on tour, something like 30 concerts, which is either impressive or freaking nuts. But as we look ahead to this kind of show-me series here for the Red Sox, Minnesota is absolutely out of the wilderness here. They've got 8 players already with double-digit home run totals, 2 others with 8 or 9. Their team slugging percentage is .514. And I'll close with this. I mean, their all-time greatest player, the Hall of Famer, greatest ever Minnesota Twin, Harmon Killebrew. You know what his career slugging percentage was? .509. Their entire team this year has a higher slugging percentage than Harmon Killebrew, which, again, not to be a curmudgeon here, but isn't that a little too much? It's like, I like donuts as much as the next guy, but this whole year, it's like Skittles and a Snickers bar and cotton candy on top of a donut. It's so much offense. I flicked around on TV Sunday afternoon, and I know this was Coors Field, but the Padres-Rockies game was 9-8 in the top of the third. There were 2 other teams that scored 15 runs just on Sunday. There was a 10, there was an 11, there was a 12. Red Sox had 8, which thankfully was enough. Again, just to close the podcast here, they went on Sunday 8-6 in 10 in a game that just took way too long, kind of like this podcast. So I'll sign off now. Thanks for listening. Appreciate it very much. And we'll talk to you after whatever happens in the opener at Minnesota. Bye-bye.
On my new podcast, On Par with Maury Povich, we're getting down to the truth behind the names that you know and love. Unfiltered conversations with legends like Leanne Morgan, Kathy Griffin, Ricky Lake, to find out when they feel the most on par. We're breaking it down with Don Lemon, Aaron Parnas, Bomani Jones, laughing it up with Josh Johnson, Dan Soder, many more. You know, the results are in. Great conversations are always on par. So follow and listen to On Par wherever you get your podcasts.